Welcome to the deep dive. So whenever you, our listener, send over a new stack of sources, the expectation is usually that we're going to be wading through some pretty dense material.
Oh, absolutely. White papers, investigative pieces.
Yeah, maybe a deeply technical corporate postmortem or something. And the standard mission for us is to process that heavy volume of text, extract the core argument, and then synthesize it all so you can step into your next meeting feeling fully briefed.
Right. That's the usual drill.
But today, the source material you've provided us presents a really, a highly unusual formatting puzzle.
That's putting it mildly.
Yeah, because the document is simply titled Pasted Text.
It is a distinct departure from our usual data sets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, opening a file expecting a comprehensive analysis and finding a completely stripped down framework, it shifts the entire analytical approach.
Completely.
We aren't dissecting an argument today. We are reverse engineering a structural blueprint.
Okay, let's unpack this.
All right.
Because the defining characteristic of today's source document is the complete absence of standard content.
Right, zero content.
Zero. There's no body copy, no headers, no captions. The entire document consists of exactly two elements.
Just two.
First, seven bracketed image placeholders, literally just the text image placeholder with underscores, followed by a sequential number from 1 to 7.
Yeah.
And second, a series of rigid divider lines constructed entirely out of standard keyboard hyphens. That's it. That's the whole document.
And what's fascinating here is the immediate assumption most people would make.
Yeah.
You know, that this is simply a broken CMS export.
Right, or like a wireframe that accidentally bypassed the draft phase. I honestly refreshed my screen a few times thinking it hadn't loaded.
Exactly. But treating this as a mere error leaves a ton of analytical value on the table. We are being presented with the pure skeleton of a digital layout.
Skeleton, yeah.
In the landscape where we are relentlessly focused on content.
Yeah.
The actual words, the high-res graphics, the data visualization, we rarely stop to conduct an architectural dig on the underlying framework itself.
We just take it for granted.
We do. Analyzing a completely blank template forces an evaluation of how structure, isolated from all that content, actually dictates user behavior. It dictates cognitive framing.
So treating it as a deliberate architectural choice rather than a glitch that changes the entire conversation.
It does.
You're essentially looking at the load-bearing walls of a page layout. And for anyone listening who's familiar with UX design or information architecture, you already know that the geometry of a page, you know, the density, the rhythm of the white space, the grouping of elements, it begins to program the reader's cognitive state milliseconds before they process the first recognizable word.
Milliseconds. Long before they consciously realize it.
Right. And the narrative arc in the specific pasted text document written entirely in these bare formatting choices is surprisingly aggressive.
Oh, that aggression is evident from the very first line.
Yeah.
Because the initial structural decision is a highly concentrated block of visual data.
Yeah.
You look at it, the document opens with image placeholder 1, image placeholder 2, and image placeholder 3.
Just boom, boom, boom.
Exactly. They're stacked consecutively. There is no interstitial text, no padding indicated, no thematic breaks. It is a single, unbroken cluster of three distinct visual assets.
It really reminds me of, imagine walking into an art gallery, right?
Okay.
You walk through the front doors, and on the very first wall, you are immediately confronted with this massive triptych of blank canvases, just stacked right next to each other.
That is a perfect analogy. Because it subverts the standard onboarding flow.
Completely. Usually you expect a hero image, maybe a title.
Right. A brief introductory paragraph to set the context.
Exactly. And then you get to the secondary visuals. But hitting the user with the three-up image cluster right out of the gate, that is a heavy cognitive demand. Think about it. Why would a creator hit their audience with three distinct visuals instantly without pausing to explain them?
It's visual primacy.
Yeah, you are bypassing the text processing centers of the brain and leveraging visual primacy to an extreme degree.
Well, that assumes the creator's intent is just to overwhelm the user. But we should also consider the alternative. This cluster might be designed for parallel processing rather than sequential reading.
Okay, what do you mean by parallel processing here?
When you group three uncaptioned placeholders into a single unbroken visual field, the underlying structure implies a composite narrative. The user isn't meant to evaluate image one and then move to image two and then image three.
They're taking it all in at once.
Right. The absolute lack of negative space or dividing elements forces the brain to synthesize that triad into one single macro concept.
So you're suggesting like a dashboard approach.
Oh.
Or maybe a comparative matrix.
Yes.
A layout where the relationship between the visuals is the actual information being conveyed rather than the isolated visuals themselves.
Precisely the opposite of a chronological flow. Think of a standard before, during, and after state.
Oh, sure.
Or a presentation of three competing data visualizations that literally have to be viewed simultaneously so you can understand the delta between them.
Right. If you split them up, you lose the comparison.
Exactly. The structural choice to fuse them together tells the user that these elements share a single conceptual boundary. Introducing any text or dividing lines between them would fracture that relationship. It would reset the user's attention.
But there is a massive risk inherent in that design choice, isn't there?
How so?
I mean, if you drop three complex visual elements into the top of a document without a structural primer, like without any text to anchor it, you risk a huge bounce rate.
That's true.
The cognitive load required to instantly synthesize a macro concept from an unbroken triptych might just cause the user to scroll past it entirely, just searching for the first anchor of recognizable text.
Which is a very valid critique of modern wireframing tendencies. However, the structure here suggests the creator is leaning heavily into the speed of visual processing. Humans process spatial and visual relationships exponentially faster than typographic hierarchies.
So by stacking these placeholders at the absolute top of the document, the architecture demands high-frequency engagement.
It operates like a visual overture.
Oh, an overture. I like that.
It establishes the conceptual weight of the document before the user's analytical filters even engage.
An overture is a really interesting way to frame it because it implies a tempo.
Yes.
And the tempo of this document is what makes it such a compelling study in pacing.
Yeah.
Because right after that dense, high-frequency opening cluster, the entire structural paradigm shifts.
It really does.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Immediately following image placeholder three, that unbroken visual space just terminates.
Abruptly.
Very abruptly. The document introduces a stark mechanical divider. It's just a continuous string of basic keyboard hyphens crossing the page.
I have to say, this specific element warrants really close inspection. Because it isn't a modern CSS border attribute.
No, it's not like a one pixel solid gray line.
Or a subtle drop shadow, nothing like that. It is an ASCII-based hard break. And if you get the characters in the source text, which I did, it is exactly 80 hyphens long.
You counted them.
I did. Exactly 80 hyphens.
Wow. Which is not an arbitrary number in the context of computing history.
Not at all. It is the standard width of an IBM punch card.
Right.
Which translated into the standard 80-column display of early terminal monitors. And honestly, it remains the default line wrap limit in a lot of raw text editors even today.
So utilizing an 80-character hyphen string as a divider, it isn't just a structural break. It's a semantic shift.
Yes. It brings a brutalist command line aesthetic into what was just a line above it, a purely fluid visual space.
It creates this incredibly high friction point. You contrast this open...
Completely obsessed. We use parallax scrolling, lazy loading, soft gradient fades all to ensure the user never feels the transition between conceptual blocks. But the creator of this document has deliberately chosen the exact opposite approach.
Then the friction has to be the mechanism itself.
Explain that.
Well, a seamless transition allows the user to maintain their current cognitive momentum, right?
All right.
If they're in a state of rapid visual synthesis from that opening triptych, a soft divider would just carry that frantic energy straight into the next section.
I see.
An 80-character ASCII line forces a hard interrupt. It's a buffer clearing command for the reader's brain.
A buffer clear. That's good.
It explicitly signals that the introductory composite narrative is over and the rules of engagement for the rest of the document have changed.
I view it as a deliberate quarantine of the opening content.
A quarantine.
Yes. The rigid typography of that hyphen string establishes a finite, impenetrable border. It essentially tells the reader that whatever contextual synthesis they derive from the first three images must now be stored in short-term memory.
Because the upcoming sequence requires a completely different processing mode.
Exactly. And that processing mode is heavily serial.
Right, because once we cross that first terminal-style divider, the architecture of the document fundamentally changes again. We enter the second half of the source text, which consists of image placeholder 4 through image placeholder 7.
I like to call this part the delineated sequence.
The layout here completely abandons the clustering technique from the top. The structure now becomes... image placeholder 4 followed by an 80-character hyphen divider.
Right.
Then image placeholder 5 followed by another divider.
Image placeholder 6, another divider.
And finally, image placeholder 7.
It's a perfect 1-to-1 ratio. One visual asset to one rigid structural barrier. Every single placeholder is isolated within its own quarantined block.
If we look at the document as a whole.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, this architectural shift fundamentally reprograms the user's reading speed.
Yes, the pacing totally changes.
The unbroken triptych at the top was designed for parallel processing, taking in multiple data points simultaneously. But this new sequence of four isolated images, it demands serial processing.
You can't just scan it all at once?
No. The structure forces a modal state. You cannot scan this section laterally or synthetically.
You are forced into a step-by-step progression. Those 80-character dividers act as toll gates. You analyze image 4, you hit the ASCII wall, you process the transition, you move to image 5.
Which heavily implies a chronological or instructional narrative arc. This is the wireframe of a standard operating procedure.
Or a complex technical tutorial.
Exactly, or an evolutionary timeline. The structure dictates that the user must achieve comprehension of a single visual state before they are permitted to cross that typographic boundary to the subsequent state.
So spacing out information completely changes how it is consumed long before a single actual word is read. But let's push back on the efficiency of that layout for a second. If the goal is a methodical, step-by-step tutorial, why rely solely on raw image placeholders separated by ASCII lines? In a fully realized document, you would normally expect interstitial text to guide the transition between those steps.
Okay, right, some sort of explanation.
Yeah. The absolute absence of space for explanatory text between the divider and the next placeholder creates a very stark, almost clinical user experience. It assumes the visual assets are so perfectly unambiguous that they require zero contextual framing.
Well, that assumes the document is in its final state. If we analyze this as a pure structural template, the lack of textual padding between the images and the dividers highlights a reliance on modal focus.
Modal focus.
Yes. When you strip away the explanatory text, the user's entire cognitive apparatus is focused solely on the visual delta between image 4 and image 5. The hyphen line acts as the only contextual clue.
It's essentially saying, state A has concluded, state B is now beginning.
Exactly. It is an exercise in extreme minimalism, forcing the visual data to carry the entire educational burden.
So, bringing this all together for you listening, what does this all mean? Why did we spend this much time analyzing the spacing and character counts of a document devoid of actual content?
Because the underlying mechanics of this pasted text file reveal the invisible architecture of attention.
The architecture of attention. I love that.
Long before you read a headline, long before you parse a data table, the wireframe of the document has already negotiated the terms of your engagement.
It really dictates the parameters of your cognitive load. If the architecture clusters assets without padding, it is demanding rapid synthesis and high emotional or conceptual engagement.
And conversely, if the architecture isolates assets with harsh mechanical dividers, it is enforcing a slower analytical sequential processing state.
Right.
The formatting is not a passive container for the information. It is an active mechanism of behavioral control.
Which is incredibly easy to overlook when the document is fully populated.
Yeah.
When a page is full of highly polished graphics and compelling copy, we attribute our reading pace and our level of comprehension to the brilliance of the author's words.
Or the designer's color palette.
Exactly. We rarely notice that we're actually just following the traffic laws laid down by the layout grids and the spacing variables.
And this really underscores the necessity of applying critical thinking, not just to the data we ingest, but to the structural vessels that deliver it.
The framing itself.
We frequently debate the bias or the factual accuracy of a piece of content. We rarely interrogate whether the structural pacing of that content is designed to rush us past weak arguments using clustered high-frequency layouts.
Oh, that's such a good point.
Or, on the flip side, if it's designed to lend unearned authority to a topic by wrapping it in the rigid, methodical pacing of isolated, delineated sequences.
The format itself is a persuasive argument. By looking at this completely stripped-down source document today, we've essentially looked at the code behind the matrix.
We isolated the pacing mechanisms without the distraction of the actual content.
Yeah. To recap our journey today, we saw the rapid-fire, parallel processing overture of images 1 through 3.
The unbroken cluster.
Right. Then we examined the brutalist, 80-character ASCII hard reset that just completely severed the document's flow. And finally, we dissected the heavily gated sequential crawl of images 4 through 7.
It highlights how seamlessly a user can be transitioned from a state of broad conceptual synthesis to a state of narrow, focused, step-by-step analysis,
utilizing nothing more than white space and keyboard characters.
It is genuinely a masterclass in structural manipulation.
It is, and it fundamentally changes how you view a standard web page or a PDF. Which brings us to the end of this highly irregular but deeply fascinating deep dive into the architecture of information.
That was a great exercise.
But before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final practical thought, something you can use to test these concepts out in the wild.
Ah, a feel assignment based on the wireframe.
Exactly that. The next time you open a highly formatted digital asset, whether that's a polished corporate prospectus, a deeply interactive long-form article, or even just a sophisticated sauce dashboard, try applying the squint test.
The squint test.
Yeah. Before you allow your brain to process a single string of readable text, physically squint your eyes until the typography blurs into unrecognizable shapes. Obscure the content and look purely at the geometry of the page.
You're looking for the clustering and the isolation.
Precisely. Look at the sheer density of the color blocks. Look for the wide expanses of negative space. Identify where the visual assets are stacked on top of one another to force rapid synthesis.
And pinpoint those rigid dividers that are acting as cognitive toll booths to slow your pace down.
Ask yourself, what behavioral state is this wireframe trying to program before I even begin to read? Are they rushing me through the conceptual framing? Are they forcing a hard reset with a brutalist structural shift?
How is the silent, invisible skeleton of this page dictating your psychological response?
Test it out on the next few documents you open. It will completely alter your awareness of digital formatting. Thank you for providing such a unique structural challenge for today's deep dive, and we'll catch you on the next one.